We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. Excited to welcome the program, Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, what's going on, man? How are you?
How you doing, man? It's been busy, busy, busy. I've done interviews all over the country about gas prices, how they're going up, going to the moon, five mistakes to avoid when you fill her up at the pump. Don't be a chump at the pump.
We'll have to ask our guest, the dialogue coach, if that's good dialogue to certain people to hear that message about gas prices. So I'm excited to welcome the program expert dialogue coach, David Camp. David, thanks for stopping by. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, so dialogue, define dialogue coach. And we're going to go a little bit into, you know, the Royals and Meghan Markle and how that dialogue conversation, you have a tip for us, but define what a dialogue coach is.
Well, a dialogue coach helps you have a better conversation. A lot of times people are talking about the things that are not most helpful to them. And a dialogue coach helps you stay on the right topic, choose the right topics, and then stay within the right attitude toward the conversation so you can get the most out of it. Dialogue is about building connections and also allowing for the possibility of collaboration. But sometimes the way we have conversations don't allow that as much as we could. So my job is to help people. That's how you think about conversations. You can have it better and thus
have
more activity and more collaboration.
Yeah. Memory is very important. When I'm on the interview circuit, et cetera, sometimes, now maybe it's just because I'm 67 years old, I will just lose my train of thought and I won't know where I am. And so I'll put a little outline notes just to get me back on track. Is that a good idea or am I...
Oh, that's a fine idea. I mean, I think that part of what is important to do is to try to be intentional about the conversations we have. That's a part of it. So certainly being intentional includes making sure I have my little memory aids that I need to keep track. But as important is, okay, what do I want this conversation to accomplish? And I think that ultimately, a lot of times people have bad conversations because they don't remember what they're trying to accomplish.
Exactly.
Have that goal. So even if you get off track, you forget what you've memorized or what you're supposed to do, look at the goal and instinctively you'll get there.
What am I trying to do here?
Mm-hmm. When I was trying to provide tips this morning at 5:30 for one room I opened up in the UK and the person didn't show up and I had to be the expert in an area in podcasting I didn't really want to be in because I had to go into more of the technical side of things, which I have a team that can take care of all that stuff. Oh my gosh, I was losing my train of thought and said, man, that's what Clubhouse brings. You got to be on your A game every time you speak. And so that's the thing. So how do you become that dialogue coach? What makes you the expert as a dialogue coach?
Well, I've been dealing with and thinking about dialogue for a few decades now. So when I have my PhD from UC Berkeley, when I finished that, I went to work for the White House for the President's Initiative on Race. Clinton had this national race initiative, national dialogue project. I was the lead advisor on that. After that ended, then I worked for a long time for various organizations that were all about dialogue. They're trying to help people have better conversation. So that's why my Twitter handle is at the dialogue guy, also Instagram too, because I spent a lot of time thinking about that. I wrote my first book about dialogue in 2007. So I think it comes from my parents bickered a lot. And I always wanted them to have a better conversation because I thought they'd be happier. So I think I'm still trying to heal the little boy within me by helping people have better conversation.
Wow. Are there a lot of guys like you out there? I mean, I've never heard of a dialogue coach. You have got competition?
Well, there are people who think about how to help people have conversations. Typically, for example, there are a lot of people in the world of like diversity, inclusion, equity, the whole race relations business who there's a whole bunch of those consultants and some of that work involves helping people have better conversations. Certainly when I approach that work, when I try to help companies or boards or nonprofits, my whole approach is how can we have a better conversation about these issues so we can find more connectivity and greater potential for collaboration. So there are people who do that.
Meetings have a lot to do with that as well.
Dialogue per se. It's like what?
Right. I was saying meetings have a lot to do with that as well. Meaning a successful meeting that you have for a company. And how do you allow the dialogue to be productive, positive, yet not waste time? Right. So that's huge, isn't it?
It's a huge thing. And part of what is a dilemma around even that is that one of the things that we know from the research about diversity and inclusion is that when you include more different types of voices, whether it's gender or race or thinking style or whatever, whatever happens is that it takes longer to come to a decision, but you usually come to better decisions, right? So yes, you're trading off, right, the inclusion question versus the efficiency time question. Those are important, and it's very useful to like think through consciously, what am I trying to get done on that? So you can thread the needle like you need to.
Good, Dave.
David, let's talk about race relations. How are we doing from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago? I mean, the country's so divided. Half of them think, what race problems? Yeah, no problems. And the other half are saying, oh, no, we've got to tear everything down. Where are we really?
Well, you know, it's funny. Your quote of half and half is about right. That certainly is true. Like that, if you look at the polling data, like that's particularly true in the white population, that about half think that racism is a problem to be dealt with, and about half don't. And so I often tell people that the real divide in this country is not between people of color and white people, it's among white people who look at this issue very differently. And so that's why I have this project. My company's called The Dialogue Company. I have a project called The White Ally Toolkit, which is all about trying to help white folks who think racism is a problem have better conversations with people who don't think it's a problem, and using dialogue skills so that
it's not
about calling people names or making them feel bad, but it's about inviting them to a new kind of conversation. Because I think if we're gonna really move the ball on racial issues, the half of the people who think, half of the white folks think race is important they can't be calling everybody a racist and kind of shame them. And, you know, the people have these tactics that are completely non-productive. Like it doesn't fit what we know about neuroscience, what we know about persuasion. So what I try to do is to persuade people that there's a better way of trying to talk about these issues so we're less divided. And so, in terms of your question of how we're doing, I mean, there's progress, but that 55% of white folks race is not a problem. That's been stuck there for a long time. On the other hand, we see progress. Like in 1990, 60% of white folks would answer on a survey that black people are lazier than white people. By 2016, it was 30%. Now you could be mad at the 30%, or you could say in 30 years, that's a lot of change.
It's improved.
Right? So I'm just saying how you want to look at it, right?
And see, you can't compare people of any race, anything, and say, oh, but that's that person. Because there's no way of looking at that. Everybody is different in so many different ways. And it's too bad that people look at that. And yeah, when anyone says it's racism a problem, it's a whole talking point. Because racism is still a problem. You can flat out see it based on the KKK and all these different groups still out there, and discrimination that's going on in every area of life. And well, so
I mean, I keep saying, but the problem is a whole bunch of people don't see it. It would be great. I mean, it would be great if everybody saw it. But the nature of this kind of thing is that it's just invisible enough that that you can choose not to see it. That's why the whole thing with George Floyd was so explosive, because there's not been a time in the past where we saw a murder live on tape and saw the face of murder, right? This is an insight from Ava DuVernay, that we never see the face of the murderer, we just see the face of the victim. So part of why this was so different is because you can't avoid it. Well, then most of the time in life about racial issues, you can decide not to see something, and it's, you know, you can decide it doesn't really exist.
Wow. Yeah. So that's another thing that bothers me is the violence, you know, and the way we are reacting to the violence, whether it's the violence from the left or the violence from the right. Why are we so divided, David?
Right. Well, I think part of what's going on is that our society is changing, and it scares a fair amount of people.
Right.
And then what happens is that people who, so the insurgent group, you know, people of color, et cetera, we make demands on the sort of traditional white mainstream that's in power. We make demands that they be different, that they look at themselves differently, that they think about who they are and how they relate to other people. And that's very complicated. Like, we make demands without recognizing that it's a headache to do all that. Like, people, if you're in an oppressed group, you're a woman, you're a person of color, person of minority, you've been thinking about like how I have to manage myself and how I show up in the world forever. And you have years and years, decades of traditions of that. Most white people haven't had to think about that, especially white men. So we're now demanding they do that, but we're not recognizing that, you know, that whole complexity thing, like, you have to do it, but it's a headache. We don't have a good invitation, you know, out of compassion based on that. So people are demanding that they do that. And of course, people are like, I don't want to do that. And thus our politics are stuck, as we're afraid of these changes, because the people who feel like there's negative impact to them, they're not being invited into another future. They're being demanded. Now all they feel is lost. They don't, the invitation doesn't come with, here's how things will be better if we do that. It's just a demand and people resist. So it's unfortunate. And part of the reason dialogue is important is so people can
exactly
make a better invitation to this new future as opposed to just a demand.
So looking at dialogue and looking at conversations, let's give you an example. On a talk show where two people, one person might be completely interviewing as a journalist while somebody else might be completely have their heart in their sleeve to ask questions that could offend the other person. And Dave, you know what I'm talking about. How do you create dialogue that makes sure that you re-engage each person as the host presenter to keep things calm? It happens even in clubhouse rooms. And I've heard stories, but I mean, even in marketing rooms or different rooms where someone disagrees with someone's opinion, how as the host, you bring them back with keeping everyone from not going crazy and angry.
Well, it's funny. The hosts need to do the same thing that I tell people do who are not hosts, but are just trying to have a better conversation, excuse me, with people that they know about, people they know. And that is this, a critical thing to keep the conversation blowing up is to keep the conversation grounded in experience, not just opinion. So people express different opinions, but what you want to do is to make sure you spend more of your conversational time on, tell me an experience that makes you think that. Right. So because you can refute somebody's opinion, but it's hard to refute their experience. So if you get people in a mode of like, you know, I think this because of this experience or that experience or this experience, you're now in a whole different kind of realm because stories, first of all, they affect our brains differently. They fire up our mirror neurons when we identify with the other person. That's one big factor. When people are arguing, they're often trying to use facts to persuade each other. Well, there's something called the backfire effect, which basically facts don't really work to change people's opinion. So if you keep the conversation mostly in the realm of storytelling and not in the realm of opinion clashing, right, you can make more progress. And then we're all making sense out of, well, how does your experience, how do I put that together with that person's experience? What does that mean about the world? We're working together to figure things out as opposed to ramming each other's opinions.
David, what's your hope for America? Do you have a dream and a vision? I mean, I think the Martin Luther King says, I have a dream, you know, where little black kids and little white kids can play together and they'll be judged more of the content of their heart rather than the color of their skin. What's your dream?
Okay. You want David's, I have a dream speech. All right.
Yeah.
So I would say the dream is a future where we all can own the good and bad parts of our history.
Yes.
Right. So like, you know, you got so many people who kind of like they can't, they're all proud of like the Western expansion, but don't want to talk about the genocide. Right. Then you have other people who are very identified with the genocide and can't talk about the courage of the Western expansion. Right. So you want to create a society where there's a narrative, there's an inclusive narrative that includes all the good and bad things. And we all can own that as part of our collective history, as opposed to that was your history or that was my history or whatever.
Right.
It's all our history.
Is the problem that we have forgotten how to debate? Debate has been around for centuries, right? That's how we come together.
You're not hearing me, bro. The problem is there's too much debate. My point is there's too much debate. There's not enough dialogue. Like, in debate,
it's the debate. You're not really going with evidence. You're going with opinion.
In debates, you're going with opinion and evidence, but in dialogue, you're going with experience. That's the difference, right?
Yeah, that's interesting for people. That's what makes you the dialogue.
It also has to do with how you're listening. Like in a debate, you're listening for what the person said is wrong, as opposed to a dialogue, listening to what the person said is that might be true. What did you say, Neil? I talked over you for a second.
No, that's fine. No, I'm going to go with this. We'll just jump real quick. What should the Royals do? So Megan and stuff, how can they get back the relationship with the Royals in a way and create more positive dialogue that's happening between the Royals and what's happening?
Sure. So one of the things that we got to look at is like, there's this big uproar because Harry said that somebody said they were asking about the skin color of the baby. What mixed race family has not had a conversation about the skin color of a baby that's coming out, right? You know, that's just the nature of of people's curiosity. Now, it could have been done in a tone that was really, really messed up, or it could have been in a tone that was not messed up or anywhere in between. So part of what this whole thing shows up is the ambiguity of these kind of conversations. That person needed to have a conversation with whoever, whether it was the prince or whoever it was, Prince Charles, whoever, to say, what did you mean by that? Or when you asked that, I kind of felt like you were denigrating my child. Was that what you were right. doing? Like they should, he should have had a conversation, and he still could have it. What was behind that question? Now, given everything else that they talked about trying to take the child security clearance and all that, it probably was right. kind of racist, right? But I'm just saying, what we don't want to walk away from is like the idea that just because somebody asked that is itself racist. That's number one. Secondly, you know, I go with the theory from that show Avenue Q, like we're all just a little bit racist. Like we need to get past this whole thing where some people are racist and other people are not. Like I heard Prince Harry asked Prince William, is the royal family racist? Everybody's yeah. kind of racist. I mean, I'm saying you get these kind of accusatory questions that don't advance the discourse. We need to shift public debate about that. But he needs to talk to his person, his family, and say, let's go back to that moment and talk about what you meant and how I felt about it.
So that's good to be looking at the true feelings of what meant and having dialogue instead of debate or
shunning.
Or disagreement.
Right.
Or shunning or attack. An mm-hmm. attack moment based on a question that Dave went through last week, but we won't bring up that never aired on the network. And Dave was just pointing a point of something and they wanted to be interviewed differently. Unbelievable. First time in 7,000 interviews, I couldn't air an interview. Just giving you that point. It's too bad. And so, yeah. And it was just, and I wasn't backed by the publicist, which is too bad. But if people listen to my show all the time, oh, well, I bring it up in another conversation and I'm having dialogue with somebody saying, you know, I'm not upset about that. But ultimately, if the question was asked in a racial tone, that would have made sense. But it was not. It was just a question in reality.
The thing is that there's so many possibilities, right? It could have been asked in a messed up racial tone and Prince Harry got it right. It could have been that it was asked in a benign tone and Prince Harry got it wrong, or could have been asked in a bad tone and the person who said it didn't think it was a bad tone. Like these things are all...
That's all part of dialogue. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So Dave, you're the caregiver. Go with your caregiver question. Very interesting conversation we've having or dialogue we're having with the dialogue guy. So go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, the royals are fresh in my memory because I just finished watching The Crown and that was interesting. But I am a caregiver. My wife suffered a stroke when she had a headache 24 years ago and she lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And so we struggle with dialogue. She still cannot talk, but she can communicate nonverbally through Pictionary and charades. And I mean, marriage is hard enough with communication. Wow. Take away the verbal part.
Yeah.
And
you'd be a special spot in heaven, brother. That's great.
Good through charades and Pictionary, two games I hate, by the way, and I suck at. But you know, I'm learning to love. My question is, everyone is eventually going to face some kind of caregiving experience. Either you're going to be one, you're going to have one, and what is your, if any, experience with caregiving?
Oh, we should come back on a whole other show about that. I was caregiver.
Well, no, I do have a radio show.
What's that?
I says, I have a radio show to caregivers and maybe you should come on my show.
My mom became paralyzed in 2012 and they gave her 6 months to live and she died in 2019 because of a whole bunch of effort by my dad and me and my wife and a whole bunch of, and they told her, not only does she have 6 months to live, we shouldn't even try to treat her. Right. I have a long experience of doing caregiving work. So I would just say that the most important thing in terms of your question is try to manage your situation so that you're not just doing logistical management. So, and then some people have more freedom in that than others, but what it becomes burdensome is if all your time is spent on logistics and arranging and caregiving and not being with the person. You got to make sure that there's enough time where you can be with the person, which helps remind you of why you're doing all the rest of that. And so some people have, you know, not that they're super rich, but some people can make choices where, okay, I'm going to pay somebody to do X amount of activities. I'm going to pay somebody to do the grocery shopping. I'm going to pay somebody to do, to give the person a bath, so that in my time, I can be with the person, right?
As opposed to
caring for them physically like that.
Yeah, great idea.
And your website's caregiverdave.com, right, Dave?
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. Like I said, I've been a long journey. My dad is 95. My mom died a year and a half ago. And she was paralyzed due to a surgical accident. So, but she was the main focus of all that caregiving activity. So, I have that badge on my soul.
You'd be a great guest on my show. I really like to have you
We'll make sure he just needs to follow you. Dave, what are you on Clubhouse? That's all he does is, again, David needs to follow Neil at Neil Haley on Clubhouse. And
I will follow you on Clubhouse. I think my Clubhouse, I'm trying to remember.
You'll find me just at Neil Haley. It's very simple. And then
how many followers have you got, David?
He's not been doing Clubhouse that much.
I don't have that many.
He's too busy.
I'm trying to grow my Instagram and Twitter.
That's the problem.
Stuff keeps changing.
Yeah, Clubhouse is going to be the best thing, and I'm going to teach David that because that's the perfect thing because people on Clubhouse need to know how to find you. So best thing, at the Dialogue Guy on Twitter and Instagram, and that's Clubhouse right. too at the Dialogue Guy as well.
Well, I was just trying to look it up.
You can change it. Make sure it is. Everyone check him out. David
you
Camp.
Can find it with his name also. And
you have a book as well, right? You have a book?
Oh, I have a few books. So yeah, if you go to thedialoguecompany.com, you'll see also the book. I have a book called Compassion Transforms Contempt. I have a book called Equipping Anti-Racist Allies. You know, I've written several books. I'm trying to move the portion. Remember I said that white people are half split in half about their feeling about racism? Right. One of my goals is move that number 10 points by 2025. Exactly. Another of my goals is to deal with this whole horrible polarization problem between the left and the right. That's my book, Compassion Transform.
Right. Okay. Awesome. You have a great mission. We appreciate it, David. Guys, thank you again. That was the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. Take care, guys.